proclaiming the gospel to the Jew first and also to the Greek. Shalom and welcome to the Everlasting Nation Broadcast, a radio ministry of International Board of Jewish Missions. I'm your host, Aaron Broughton, and thank you for joining me today. Well, today I'd like to share with you a Hebrew nugget, which is a Hebrew word study of sorts, and this material is provided by our dear friend and ministry, Jackie Powell. You can find valuable Hebrew study tools and other resources at her website, lightforisrael.org. Now then, let's dig into this lesson. The first important word in today's Torah study is the word todot, which means generations. The first verse from Genesis 25, verse 19 says, "And these are the generations of Isaac." The word toldot, or generations, is a key phrase in Genesis and occurs 11 times. The Hebrew root or shorish for toldot is yeled, the Hebrew word for child and also a boy, while a girl is called yelda. The Hebrew word nolad means born, while birthday is yom holedet, literally meaning the day of birth. All of these words come from the same Hebrew shorish or the root. Genesis contains the phrase, "These are the generations of," 10 times. For example, in Genesis 2, the heavens and the earth, Adam in Genesis 5, Noah in Genesis 6, the sons of Noah in Genesis 10, Shem in Genesis 11, Terah also later on in Genesis 11, Ishmael and Isaac in Genesis 25, and then Esau in Genesis 36, and then followed by Jacob in Genesis 37. Now, the late Dr. Henry Morris wrote in his book, The Genesis Record, that these divisions were possibly journal records that Moses used to compile the books of Genesis. This Torah portion begins with division number 8. Here, Rebekah was pregnant with twins who were fighting before they were even born. Rebekah asked God about it, and his reply in Genesis 25, verse 23, is a very important Bible prophecy where it reads, "And the Lord said unto her, Two nations are in thy womb, and two manner of people shall be separated from thy bowels, and the one shall be stronger than the other people, and the elder shall serve the younger." Now, Bible names are very important and often reflect the character of a child or the character the parents want the child to have. Concerning Jacob and Esau, Genesis 25, verse 25 says, "And the first came out all red, all over like a hairy garment, and they called his name Esau." Verse 26 says, "And after that came his brother out, and his hand took hold on Esau's heel, and his name was called Jacob." Now the Hebrew word Yaakov, from which Jacob's name derives, means heel. The meaning is evidence as Jacob, or Yaakov as we say in Hebrew, was holding Esau's heel at birth. Jacob followed at Esau's heels, meaning he was born second. In the natural order, Esau the firstborn would have leadership and the birthright. The first time the word birthright, Bechorah, is mentioned in the Tanakh is a few verses down where it says, "And Jacob said, Sell me this day thy birthright." Bechorah literally means firstborn. However, the biblical birthright referred to the inheritance rights of the firstborn son. At death, the father's property was divided among his sons, but the firstborn got a larger portion. This was not to squander on himself, but so that he could care for his mother and any unmarried sisters. With the blessing of the birthright came a big responsibility. The story in Genesis 25 says that Esau chose the physical over the spiritual and the immediate over the eternal and sold his birthright to his brother Jacob for a meal of red lentils. Verse 34 says, "Thus Esau despised his birthright." Esau did not want the birthright and all the responsibility that went with it, but he did want the double portion, the blessing. However, the two go together, and since he despised the birthright, he did not receive the blessing either. God is omnipotent and takes all events and works them out to his will. God had told Rachel before the boys were born that the elder would serve the younger. God, in his foreknowledge, knew that Esau would despise his birthright and lose both it and the blessing. Later on, God would change Jacob's name permanently to Israel, which means prince with God. The line of the Jewish people and the promised Messiah would go through Jacob, not Esau. Esau's decision had eternal implications for him and his descendants. We need God's wisdom to make good decisions. James 1:5 says, "If any of you lack wisdom, let him ask of God, that giveth to all men liberally and upbraideth not, and it shall be given him." This has been a Hebrew Nugget provided by our good friend and ministry, Jackie Powell. You can read more information at lightforisrael.org. Now then, let's turn our attention to Brother Mark Oshman with today's Bible lesson.
Thank you for joining our radio program. With this session, we conclude our introductory survey of the New Testament era. During the days of Jesus Christ's ministry, a number of Jewish groups held influential positions in that culture. Some of these sects had a religious basis, such as the Essenes. Others existed primarily as political entities, for example, the Herodians. Yet other groups, such as the Pharisees and the Sadducees, other groups combined both religious and secular aspects in their collective identities. The term Pharisee probably means separated one in the Hebrew language. It referred to the adherence of the Pharisaical code, strict observance of laws and traditions. They followed not only the commandments of the Old Testament, but also the traditions of the elders, as Jesus Christ said in Matthew 15. In the 18th chapter of Luke's Gospel, the author illustrated the Pharisaical mindset that existed amongst this group. Jesus Christ depicted a Pharisee praying in the following fashion, quote, God, I thank thee that I am not as other men are, extortioners, unjust, adulterers, or even as this publican. I fast twice in the week. I give tithes of all that I possess, unquote. The Pharisees frequently manifested spiritual pride. In Matthew 23, Jesus Christ harshly criticized their hypocrisy and their spiritual blindness. The term Sadducee came from the Hebrew word tzaddik, in other words, righteous one. This self-applied derivation may refer to the way that these Jews wanted to live. However, the name Sadducee may also derive from the person Zadok, found in chapter 1 of 1 Kings. Zadok had been appointed as the high priest by King David, replacing the previous high priest who had rebelled against him. Many Sadducees, such as Annas and his family, including Caiaphas, many Sadducees served as high priests. The Sadducees probably comprised a smaller and more elite group of individuals, yet they exercised greater influence than the Pharisees did. The Pharisees were their longtime religious and political rivals. Indeed, the Sadducees seemed to predominate in the Sanhedrin, or the Jewish High Council, during the New Testament era. According to chapter 12 of Mark, the Sadducees denied any belief in the resurrection of the dead, or in life after death. Paul made that an issue when he stood before the Sanhedrin, in the 23rd chapter of Acts. The Pharisaical members of that body supported him, declaring, quote, We find no evil in this man, but if a spirit or an angel hath spoken to him, let us not fight against God, unquote. The resulting dissension between the Pharisees and the Sadducees motivated Claudius Lysias, the Roman centurion in charge, to remove Paul from that situation. The Sadducees and Pharisees frequently contended with one another for spiritual supremacy in Israel. However, when Jesus Christ came on the scene, the groups formed an alliance to defeat him. The Herodians probably denoted a faction that supported the policies and the government of Herod Antipas. They conspired with the Pharisees against Jesus Christ during the Savior's early ministry in Galilee. Mark provided evidence for this alliance in the 3rd and the 12th chapters of his gospel. Later on, the Herodians sought to entangle the Lord by asking him this question, quote, Is it lawful to give tribute unto Caesar or not? Unquote. The Essenes were a numerically smaller sect. They practiced a communal monastic lifestyle at Qumran, located near the Dead Sea. Bible researchers associated the Essenes with the Dead Sea Scrolls, a group of writings found in Qumran between 1947 and 1956. The Essene community operated under a system of strict religious communism. Each new member had to turn over to the community any wealth he possessed. Proselytes obtained full membership after a 2-year probation period. The Essenes rejected the validity of temple worship, refusing to attend the festivals in Jerusalem or to support the temple. Though several commentators believe that John the Baptist at one time associated with the Essenes, there is no firm evidence of that in the Bible. The Zealots comprised one of several different revolutionary sects. They opposed the Roman occupation of Israel. Their existence dated from AD 6, when a man named Judas from Galilee established this group in opposition to the Romans imposing a tax upon the Jews. The Zealots attained a prominent position in the AD 66 revolt against the Roman Emperor Vespasian. The Zealots probably had no formal organization, at least at first. However, the term sometimes referred to any Jews who were zealous for God's law. Simon the Zealot, one of Jesus Christ's apostles, might have belonged to such a group before he joined Jesus Christ. Take note that he and Matthew, who had been a tax collector for the Romans, that Simon the Zealot and Matthew apparently got along quite harmoniously. Not until after the fall of the Maccabean dynasty, which was in the first century B.C., not until the Maccabean dynasty fell did the Jews yearn for a deliverer. They began to look for a Jewish figure that would accomplish three tasks. This person would free them from the yoke of the hated Roman usurper. He would put an end to the imperious Roman rule. And he would establish his own reign of peace and justice. In this way, their hopes gradually became centered in the Messiah, as prophesied in the Old Testament. Some Jews believed in two messiahs. Messiah ben Joseph, according to this belief, Messiah ben Joseph would gather the children of Israel around him, march to Jerusalem, reestablish the temple worship, and set up his own dominion. After the forces of Gog and Magog killed Messiah ben Joseph, according to these beliefs, another Messiah, called Messiah ben David, would come and resurrect Messiah ben Joseph. First century Jews believed that the Messiah would serve as a symbol, if not indeed an active agent, to accomplish the deliverance of Israel. The prophet Elijah would herald the coming of the Messiah, as foretold in the fourth chapter of Malachi. According to Jewish belief, the Messiah would live eternally. He will restore the temple. He will rebuild Jerusalem, which will enjoy divine protection, both for itself and for its inhabitants. Furthermore, Jews believe that Messiah will exercise sovereignty over the entire earth, as foretold in Psalm 2. The Messiah would make the Mosaic Law the universal law of mankind, with the Jewish ideal of education being realized to the fullest. Messiah, according to Jewish doctrine, will reign as a righteous judge, dispensing justice and equity without showing any bias. Messiah would serve as a champion of the poor and the oppressed, the very personification of social justice. During his reign, according to Jewish belief, Messiah will reward the righteous who will surround him. First century Jews believe that their Messiah will vindicate his followers' faith in God and the faithfulness of Israel, and that he will do so in the eyes of the entire world. Many of Jesus Christ's own followers expected him to fulfill traditional Jewish expectations relating to the Messiah. In the 24th chapter of Luke, two of his disciples, when talking with Jesus Christ, said, quote, "We trusted that it had been he which should have redeemed Israel," unquote. Jesus Christ rebuked them for failing to grasp that Messiah first needed to suffer and to die before entering into his glory. The Middle Eastern world of the first century AD contained a number of groups with differing hopes and expectations. To them, the Christ of Christianity was, perhaps, one more God among many. However, Christians insisted that the only deity worthy of worship was the God of the Bible. From the Roman perspective, this type of religious intolerance, as they would term it, sometimes provoked Roman persecutions of Christians. Christians do need to remember, though, that Jesus Christ forewarned them about this. He said to his disciples, quote, "If the world hate you, ye know that it hated me before it hated you," unquote. Thank you for listening to this broadcast.
You've been listening to the Everlasting Nation broadcast, a radio ministry of International Board of Jewish Missions. For more information, you can write us at P.O. Box 1386, Hickson, Tennessee 37343, or call us at 423-876-8150. Or you may also go online at ibjm.org. Until next time, may God bless and shalom.